25520. Mr. Pelz.
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court. Matt Bells again for the Evergreen Association. Like the Bossbill case, we're here on standing. I'll introduce the case by talking about some differences.
Sure. That'd be helpful.
The no waiver provision is not in this law. The accessing an employee's information is not in this law. I think probably notably the biggest change is the city's law expressly regulates speech, and Evergreen is already violating that provision in the same ways that we talked about before. The district court completely disregarded the speech provision. The speech provision that I'm talking about says you can't declare, print, or circulate any statement that directly or indirectly expresses a limitation or specification on reproductive health decision making. Again, we're here on relaxed standing rules. I think this speech code, it's intertwined with the expressive association claim, first of all, because both these courts...
don't the two things travel together? So if it were right that the city can prohibit you from discriminating on the basis of reproductive health decision-making or beliefs about it or whatever, shouldn't they also be allowed to tell you can't tell employees that you're going to discriminate? Like, if you lost on the expressive association, would you still prevail on the speech claim?
Well, I think they affect each other. So in the expressive association standing claim, Judge Chen said, you do a really good job of filtering out employees you don't want. You do a good job of screening your employees. But the speech provision at the same time bars those activities. Reverend Hardin can't sit down and say, what are your experiences with abortion? This law also applies to prospective employees. I don't think that's questionable. If he can't do that, or if they can't have this no waiver provision that expresses a specification or a limitation about who they want to hire, then that goes back. That really undermines.
There isn't the same no waiver provision, but that provision about expressing a limitation serves the same function.
I think so. Yeah. Exactly. So requiring a pro-life commitment, that's in Evergreen's job listings and things like that. A pro-life commitment is again incompatible with having an abortion. I think that's something that is barred by this specific.
Well, as I understand the record, but maybe I've misunderstood it, there are people who can apply and indeed can be employed who've had an abortion, but have used the word repent in the earlier colloquy, but have expressed a belief that is consistent with Evergreen's statement. And so they can then be employed. Is that correct?
That's true, Your Honor. Evergreen has said from the beginning of this case, and we talked about this in oral argument 5 years ago, that if there's somebody that comes to Evergreen who's had an abortion 10 years ago, they regret it.
That's the core of Catholic doctrine.
Yeah, and they, that can be the most helpful sort of messenger that Evergreen can have. That doesn't mean that if they have somebody who comes in and said, I had an abortion yesterday, whatever, I want a job.
Right, you would say
it's totally different.
If somebody signs the pro-life commitment and then turns around and has an abortion and then says, oh, I regret it, you would infer that they're not taking the commitment that seriously.
Yeah, I mean, the statute
does draw a distinction, like I said, most anti-discrimination laws seems to me don't do this, but if the statute does distinguish between the status and beliefs about the status, isn't it true that you care most about the beliefs?
No, I don't see how you can break the two apart. If someone says they're pro-life and they have an abortion, it doesn't matter what they said. And I think what we're getting at is this statute takes away my client's, or the law takes away my client's right to make this determination. It's Evergreen's expressive association. And if they want to fire a person because they had an abortion, they should have that right. And if they want to retain somebody who had an abortion because they're a good messenger, that's their right too. It's the interference with the decision in general that's the problem. So I don't really see the distinction between beliefs and views. I think it's kind of made up. As I said earlier.
When you say beliefs and views, you mean
beliefs and action. I'm sorry. Okay. As I said, again, coming to, in defending an action, saying, "Well, all we cared about was their beliefs and what they said about it, not that they actually had an abortion." That's never going to hold up. I mean, I guess I would hope it would if it comes to that for my client. But
so, one difference between Local Law 20 and the Boss Bill is the Boss Bill is a freestanding piece of legislation, and Local Law 20 puts reproductive health decision making as a protected status alongside other characteristics like race and sexual orientation and so on, right?
Right.
Okay. So the state was just saying that, well, we think that the Boss Bill might operate differently than other discrimination laws in that it's focused on the decision making and not on beliefs about the status. So if it might violate the prohibition on the discrimination on the basis of race if an employer asks employees to profess beliefs about race that are hostile to one particular race, maybe the Boss Bill acts differently. But here, you have a status alongside other statuses, right? So if it's true that the anti-discrimination law says that employers can't require employees to affirm that the white race is the superior race, or that women belong in the home, or that homosexuality is an abomination, it would also create a hostile environment and maybe be prohibited if an employer requires everybody to affirm that abortion is murder and is immoral, right?
Sure. And I assume the city is going to say, Evergreen, you can do whatever you'd like regarding requiring certain beliefs. You just can't take any action on conduct. And again, we don't necessarily see the distinction if there actually has been an abortion at some point.
I mean, you're saying you don't see the distinction. I mean, I see the distinction, but like, do you think that the New York City Human Rights Commission would accept the idea that an employer is not saying they won't hire somebody who's a racial minority, they just say that all employees must affirm that the white race is the superior race?
Well, I think that's
the belief and not the status. Like, would that really be an acceptable defense to a claim of discrimination?
Under the speech code that we're talking about, I think we would that would certainly be expressing a preference for whatever racial minority or majority you're talking about.
Scenarios speculative? I mean, we have to look at something that is concrete, right? These hypotheticals, one could come up with lots of different hypotheticals. Are they too speculative or conjectural to give rise to standing?
I mean, the record is clear how my client interviews prospective employees about asking about their experience with abortion and making decisions.
I mean, is it likely that you're going to see an applicant who had an abortion yesterday and then is going to come in and profess to, not believing in abortion? I mean, it's certainly possible, but isn't that somewhat speculative?
I don't believe so. I mean, my client, they do get approached by people who've had abortions. That's also in the record.
And a lot has happened, but the scenario of it happening just very recently and then coming in and saying something that was inconsistent, isn't that conjectural?
I think it's not certain, but it does. They do hire people who have had abortions. They have discussions, and whether those discussions are, fruitful in terms of future employment, I think is at issue, and that's their determination to make.
Well, but regardless, again, there's the three ideas: whether you're actually going to take an adverse employment action against a person, whether you are, enforcing an agreement under the state law or expressing the preference under the city law, and whether you're inquiring about medical history, right? So for the second one, right, so that idea that, the status that's being protected is people who've had abortions, and you make everybody who comes in affirm that abortion is murder and is immoral and so on. That is the equivalent of somebody comes in who's a racial minority and you say, well, we're willing to hire you as long as you say that the white race is a superior race, right?
Right.
So it's not that it's about whether you're actually going to hire somebody that you would then take an action against, at least for this possible violation. It's about whether that practice that you are doing, the pro-life commitment, is a violation of the statute.
Yeah, I think those are the asking about employees and the waiver that is in place right now with five or six employees, whatever it is it is what it is right now. It's not that there's nothing speculative about it. And it says you've got to, I mean, it makes a very clear preference.
Is there, Mr. Belz, just clarify this for me, maybe this is a housekeeping issue. Is there a religious exemption available?
There is one for, forgive me, I believe it's the city case. that there is a religious organization. If it's the state case, I'm going to kick myself. I believe it's the city case.
No, don't worry. We're all friends here.
There is a religious organization exemption that both Evergreen and the city have agreed does not apply to Evergreen. It sort of requires you be controlled by a religious organization.
Evergreen never sought the exemption.
No, I don't. I believe we've agreed that they would not qualify for it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from counsel for the city. Ms. Gudafson?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honor. Ingrid Gustafson on behalf of the city. I want to, at the outset, jump in on the importance of pulling apart the two claims here when we're talking about standing. There are two claims remaining in this city case, which are the expressive association claim and the free speech claim, and they're getting at different injuries. So, there has to be standing for every claim. And on the expressive association claim, the injury that plaintiffs have identified is that they might have to hire someone who agrees with their views but has taken conduct different that is opposed to their beliefs. And the problem with this theory, without getting into any difficult enforcement questions, without getting into the beliefs acts distinction, is that it is entirely speculative on this record. It relies on an act by a third party, that is an employee or an applicant, to apply or remain and take a certain decision, for Evergreen to find out about it and for it to take certain enforcement action.
So you're saying it's never possible? I mean, when we have questions like an application of the anti-discrimination laws to a religious organization and we apply the ministerial exception, we don't say that the religious organization has to actually wait until a woman applies to be a Catholic priest and then defend itself. Like, they do get pre-enforcement review, right? Like, so this idea that it's like inherently speculative as to whether they're ever going to hire anybody,
it
doesn't normally apply in that context. So if they are engaging in activities that arguably violate the statute and there isn't a disavowal, like, there would be standing, right?
I mean, I disagree with Your Honor. I mean, I think that's a different doctrine, and there has to be an impending credible threat of enforcement.
In both cases, it's about Article 3 case or controversy standing. So, like, if it were right that whenever you're expecting to hire an employee, it always depends on a third-party action, and therefore it's always speculative, you'd never be able to get pre-enforcement review against an anti-discrimination law.
But
we have lots of cases where you do.
If I may focus on the summary judgment record here, my point is not that you would never have standing on this basis. You would just have to show that it's non-speculative. And here's what we have on this record. We know that plaintiffs have adduced zero admissible evidence that they have ever declined to hire someone based on a sexual reproductive health decision. They have admitted that one has ever been terminated or disciplined.
That I was talking about before as to whether it's arguable that the beliefs are covered by the statute. So let me ask you that question. So under local law 20, it's not just reproductive health decisions, but also race and sex and so on. So if an employer, if there's a Walmart in New York City, and it says, we're willing to hire racial minorities as long as everybody affirms the white race is the superior race, would that be allowed because that's a belief about the status and not the status itself?
I mean, I think it would be difficult to say that Walmart could do that, Your Honor.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. So no. Isn't it normally the case that the beliefs actually are prohibited, like requirement of beliefs that are tied to the status are prohibited by the
discrimination? There are several points I would make, Your Honor. First, both the state and the city have been clear throughout, I think, full scope of this litigation, that these laws do not bar the plaintiffs talking about their pro-life beliefs.
So you're saying Walmart can't require beliefs about race. Could Walmart require beliefs about abortion? So if there's a Walmart in New York City and it says all employees of Walmart must affirm that abortion is murder and is immoral, would that be allowed?
I can also tell you that every enforcement decision is going to depend on the facts and circumstances.
What they're doing is not arguably covered by the statute. It's just that we might choose not to enforce it That's different than saying it's not even arguably covered. So I'm asking, if Walmart were doing the exact same thing, Walmart says all Walmart employees must affirm abortion is murder and is immoral, and if you say something different, you can't be employed at Walmart. Would New York City say that that violates Local Law 20?
I mean, I would point out, and Your Honor may tell me that it's different, but this court did accept this distinction, I believe, on the vagueness challenge in Slattery 1. I believe this court accepted the government's representation that it did not extend
to
pro...
Well, we say the government has represented this, right?
To pro...
But we didn't, like, say that that's necessarily correct.
The distinction...
So I don't know if that's right. So I'm asking you, is that the way you understand Local Law 20? So if Walmart said all employees of Walmart must affirm abortion is murder and is immoral, and that is that belief is a requirement for employment at Walmart,
would that
violate Local Law 20?
That case might well come out differently, Your Honor. But what is important for standing before this court right now...
No, but what's the difference between Walmart and Evergreen?
We're talking about,
like,
laws...
Another employer in New York City engaging in the exact same conduct as this employer would be violating Local Law 20. How could it be that they're not even arguably violating Local Law 20?
Again, the laws in this case are different from Boswell. They've been around for 60 years, and the Human Rights Commission has extensive experience, and there's extensive precedent on enforcement. They certainly look to the skills and qualifications of a job, and we have here a mission-based pro-life employer.
So it is not relevant what you believe about abortion, but for Evergreen it is? Is that the difference?
Well, there's a distinction of, like, what could possibly be, like, a legitimate qualification, but
just to clarify, does that mean that for Evergreen, your beliefs about abortion is a legitimate qualification, but for Walmart it's not? Is that the distinction?
I'm saying that could be a distinction. Every single enforcement
true,
case...
Doesn't that mean what you're saying is, because Evergreen is an expressive association, Local Law 20 can't apply to Evergreen the same way it applies to other employers in New York City?
No, Your Honor. I'm saying on this summary judgment record, there is zero credible evidence of enforcement.
A few minutes ago, you were starting to say on the summary judgment record here, and you wanted to tick off some points. What were those points? It would be helpful to me to hear.
So the first two were...
The first one, you said, was zero evidence.
There's zero evidence they've ever not declined to hire on this basis. They fired on this basis. They hire people all the time. That's a direct quote, who have had abortions in their past. They said the same is probably true with birth control. They also said they're not hiring right now. They had paused the internship program. The organization was in flux. It had new leadership. Reverend Hardin said that he might change some of the screening measures for how hiring was done. I mean, we have just no evidence that they're going to take an act, or that it's not speculative. They're going to take an act that violates this law. And if that case comes up, I mean, the standing determination is just they don't have standing now. If that case comes up, they could bring a lawsuit
okay, so
to help
the,
us intelligibly
the
analyze the
merits. Prohibition. If they said, if you know, we don't allow employees to have abortions, just that agreement, if that's what they said, would that violate the statute?
Yes, I think we're on the free speech claim
no,
now.
I
but
mean,
yes,
I
the promise
know.
To abort.
Either one. So, like, they're saying not being able to require that undermines their right to expressive association and also free speech.
I actually do not think that they have articulated a viable theory of how that would go to their expressive association.
Right, I don't want to get into which claim is. I want to talk about whether it arguably.
I think we're talking about whether it arguably violates
the statute. I'm just going to bracket what the relevant claim is. Okay, so
yeah.
You're saying if they did require. If they did say in the pro-life commitment, all employees agree that they're not going to have an abortion, that would violate the statute?
Yes.
Okay, and so the employer who drafted the current pro-life agreement says that's the way they understand the agreement, and that's how they intend to enforce it. Doesn't that mean that there's at least a question of material fact as to whether that's what it means?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that's the litigation position they've taken, but I think we look at that. We always have to remember we are at summary judgment at this point. So what is the evidence in the record? We have the agreement
itself in the record.
It's an honor code.
If this case is dismissed for lack of standing, which is without prejudice, and tomorrow they just clarified that they wrote that expressly into their agreement, then they'd have standing because it would be a violation of the statute.
Well, I mean, they would still have to show an imminent credible threat of enforcement. I do think it would, could be a
well,
different
don't you,
case.
I mean, our cases say that if it's a recent statute that's not moribund and the city hasn't disavowed enforcement, we presume that it's going to be enforced. So, like, is the city disavowed enforcement against Evergreen?
This based solely on I can represent that based solely on this statement of position as it exists, the city does not intend to enforce Local Law 20 of 2019 against Evergreen because the city believes that the best reading of this document is like their job application materials is a belief based document.
Okay, but then that goes back to my other question, which is you said that if Walmart required a belief-based document, it might very well violate the statute. So so why are you deciding that that's the best reading of the statute as applied to Evergreen, but it's not the best reading of the statute as applied to Walmart?
How can it be specific,
that it has two different readings?
This is the evidence that we have in front of us. We've been able to review it.
But I'm asking whether the status of Evergreen makes a difference, and because you're saying our interpretation of the statute is not the way we'd interpret the statute as applied to other employers in New York City, then I just don't understand.
No, I'm not trying to make that
this.
Representation. I'm just trying to.
Okay, so then that means that if it's you're allowed to require beliefs about abortion, doesn't it mean that it must be the case that if Walmart is based in New York City and requires all employees to affirm abortion is murder and is immoral, that wouldn't violate Local Law 20?
I'm sorry, I missed the question, Your Honor, if you wouldn't mind repeating.
If Walmart required the beliefs-based document that you described, it requires all employees at Walmart in New York City to affirm abortion is murder and is immoral, that wouldn't violate Local Law 20.
I'm saying it could.
So if it could, doesn't that mean you're just saying it arguably violates the statute to require this pro-life commitment?
No, Your Honor. Maybe I'm missing something in the hypothetical. Like, I had understood the hypothetical to be if Walmart makes someone promise not to...
It's just the same thing, the same document, right? The employees of Evergreen have to affirm abortion is murder and it's immoral, right? That's what the record says. And you're saying that's okay because Local Law 20 doesn't prohibit an employer from requiring employees to profess a belief about abortion.
I'm saying
if Walmart did the exact same thing they're doing and required employees to express the exact same belief that they require employees to express about abortion, would it violate Local Law 20? Your argument requires you to say no, but you're saying maybe it would.
It's very difficult. I mean, every enforcement case is extremely specific, and it is very
but
difficult
to
make. But
if that's true, then haven't they shown that at least it arguably violates the statute? So if there's some other employer engaging in the exact same conduct, you're saying that might be a violation. That means that what they're doing at least arguably violates the statute.
At summary judgment, we have to have concrete evidence in the record of an imminent threat of enforcement. And also the difference on the free speech claim here is we have a provision that has been in effect for 60 years.
I'm talking about whether it arguably violates the statute. So I'm going to bracket the threat of enforcement. I'm just talking about whether you consider it to be a violation.
The positional statement, no. I do not consider the positional statement to be a violation.
Right, but if Walmart required the exact same positional statement, that also wouldn't be a violation.
Is Walmart in New York? Anywhere in New York?
Walmart would never issue such a statement, right?
I mean, that would be quite shocking.
And even assuming there was a violation, a prosecutor has discretion whether to go after someone or not, right?
Yes.
And so there are differences between Walmart, this giant national company, and Evergreen, a much smaller company that's been operating for 50 years that does have this mission. A prosecutor can say, I will go after Walmart, but I won't go after Evergreen based on the exact same violations in theory, correct?
Yes, and that is what I'm trying to say.
Okay,
the enforcement
practice is different. You agree with what Judge Chin just said, which is that you're exercising enforcement discretion based on the fact that Evergreen has a pro-life mission.
I think it's relevant when we're trying to work through future hypotheticals, but I just don't think the court needs to get to these hypotheticals.
Judge Chin said the reason you would go after Walmart and not after Evergreen is because you're exercising enforcement discretion based on Evergreen's
pro-life mission. I didn't use the word would. I said that there are differences between Walmart and Evergreen that could influence a prosecutor's prosecutorial decision. You agree with that?
Yes, and it is one consideration that goes into the credible threat of enforcement. We also, again, we have statutes of 60 years and zero evidence about how it
would be enforced. The reason there's no credible threat of enforcement is because you're exercising prosecutorial discretion, because even though you could go after them, you're choosing not to.
All I'm trying to say is that different enforcement
Thank
cases
you very
can come,
much.
Come out different.
We'll
Thank
hear,
you.
We'll hear a rebuttal.
Thank you. Part of what I'm hearing is there's at least some agreement that our expressive association claim has merit, and that might be the reason for a lack of credible threat of enforcement.
So if it were true that the city of New York was saying, well, we would go after a secular employer if they were doing the exact same thing, but we're not going to go after Evergreen because of enforcement discretion, even though that conduct, you know, might be in violation of the statute, that would not be a reason for concluding that your conduct arguably violates the statute. That would be a concession that actually there's something about your expressive mission that requires a different application of the law.
Right, and I would love to hear an outright concession that Evergreen is an expressive association that is protected from this law, but we're sort of hearing both sides, I think, that you know they want this law to exist and to apply against us, but we just don't have standing.
So your friends on the other side have adverted to the summary judgment record, and you heard Ms. Gustafson go through the absence of evidence on this record that would support determination that you've got, that Evergreen, your client's got standing. Can you take us through the same summary judgment record in a helpful way to point us to where there is real evidence that supports standing?
Yeah, the argument I would say is, Your Honor,
not the argument, just the evidence.
The state or the city is correct. Evergreen has never fired anyone for having an abortion. They have been allowed to ask employees about their abortions, prospective employees about their experiences with abortion. And I think that is what has protected them and allowed them to make good decisions. That's what the city, the district court and the city said was, you know, they've got these great screening processes. Well, meanwhile, there's a speech provision that says you can't do that anymore. So I think that the two conflict. And
look, I'm sympathetic to standing. I don't really care where it's coming from. I'm sympathetic to allowing litigants into federal court. But is there some set of citations to the record that you can point us to rebut either the city, the city's sort of litany of areas in the record that don't seem to support standing?
Well, the fact that the waiver provision is in the record, this document that says that you must uphold Evergreen's opposition to abortion, that is in the record. The fact that Jim Harden or whoever's in charge, it used to be Chris Slattery, would ask mm-hmm. employees about their experiences with abortion and would make decisions based on that is in the record.
But I think I just heard something similar as to what the counsel for the state, Mr. Brockton, said, which is effectively a disavowal, and I know you may have heard something slightly different, but a disavowal on this summary judgment record. What's your response to that?
I don't know that the city's counsel said that as well, but I can't say we wouldn't welcome disavowal at this point. I don't like that it happened now.
But you did say earlier that we should evaluate a disavowal that happens now in terms of mootness.
Yeah, I think it's
that involves whether it's opportunistic and whatever. Like, it's a different consideration from standing.
Right, and I'd go back to voluntary
cessation. Can I just talk about what I was saying before about three possible predicate violations, right? So there's whether you're going to take an adverse action against an employee, whether the pro-life commitment that you require is itself a violation of the statute, and requesting medical information. Those three things all would be could be violations of each of the statutes, right?
Correct.
Okay, so whether you're gonna fire a particular person for having an abortion might depend on whether you hire somebody and that person has an abortion and then you fire them. But the second one about the pro-life commitment, right, if that's understood to be a commitment not to have an abortion, I think the state and the city both agreed that it would be a violation of the statute. They say the statute doesn't violate beliefs, and then the question is whether it arguably does, right? So then that's the way we should evaluate that. And I guess your position would be on the summary judgment record, you require a pro-life commitment, and you think it arguably violates the statute.
I think a pro-life commitment.
On the medical information, the reason that the state says that's not a current violation, and the district court was wrong about that, is because the state statute doesn't reach prospective employees, but the city statute does, right?
Correct.
Does the city statute have a prohibition on getting a medical history? The medical history, like asking about the medical history.
So what it prohibits expressing a preference on reproductive health decision, and what Jim Harden has said in his deposition was we ask about prospective employees.
It says you can't make any inquiry in connection with prospective employment, which expresses directly or indirectly specification or discrimination as to age and so on, including reproductive health decisions. So when you ask about, like, have you had an abortion,
right,
you make clear that your preference is that they have not had an abortion, right?
Yeah, I mean, in his deposition, he followed that up and said, and the deposition was in the state case, it's used in both, that we make decisions based on their responses.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very helpful argument. We'll reserve decision, obviously.